Good morning, good morning.
Good morning.
Happy New Year. This morning, we're going to talk about a mess. And that mess is us. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. We were looking at Hebrews 12 this morning in class. It's been a favorite section of mine, so I'll share a little more about shortly here. Let's start off by reading it. Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us, fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinners, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. And like I shared in class this morning, the bolded section there of the running the race with perseverance has always been kind of a special part of this to me. It's been a special verse. I have enjoyed, well, I have raced a lot. In junior high, I did track, and in high school, cross country. In recent years, have started doing triathlons. I've not been good at any of them, but it's something that I'll use the word enjoy. I'll enjoy doing. And this idea of running the race, about spiritual life being compared to a race, I've been able to identify with because of that. I used this verse as something to try to get that last mile out sometimes when having a hard race, you know, run the race with perseverance, and you know, try to get some inspiration from that. Now, I don't know what comes in your mind when you think of running this race with perseverance, but for fun, I did a Google image search on what sort of things get put out on the internet for Hebrews 12:1. And here's some of the images that are there. It often has the finish line right there. You see the guy with the cross on his jersey smiling as he's crossing the finish line. You know, he should know you got to lean into that tape and improve your time. You see blazing speed. You see somebody looks like he's taking the whole race in one step. Smiling children, smiles on the faces, we're running the race, we know where the finish line is, and we're so happy to be running. And I can understand where that image comes from. You know, we up here and we preach about the wonders at the finish line and how God is with you, and we're surrounded by such a cloud of witnesses, and it feels nice. But how many of you have run a race and felt like any of these pictures? If we said, we're going to hit pause, we're going to go out, and we're going to run downtown even, and back, how many would be looking like this by the time you got back to your seat? It's not been my experience either. In fact, I'm going to share with you, at one of the races that I've done a few times, triathlon races, they so kindly take pictures of every competitor in each of the three disciplines, swim, bike, run. I'm going to show you some of mine. Remember these faces. No, we don't need to see it. That's better, I guess. This isn't the same face, right? I don't smile during the races. You probably don't either. It hurts. You get tired. I wish that I was one of those triathletes or even athlete that looks good while doing it. Or I'd even take feeling good while doing it, right? When in the middle of a race, it's hard. It's a struggle. Now, some of the top athletes, you know, they're so good, they get really cool nicknames, right? Some of the top triathletes, like Scott Molina is the Terminator. Thomas Hellriegel is Hell on Wheels. Conrad Stoltz, the Caveman, or just Dave Scott, the Man. I love those kind of nicknames. My triathlon nickname, which seems to have developed, is Sir, Are You Okay? I've heard that many times, coming out of the water. The bike picture there may not look so bad, but further down that road, in that race, I actually fell off my bike. And chain came off, and I didn't know what to do. Sir, are you okay? Can you help me get back on my bike? I'm a mess when I race. And maybe that is why I enjoy so much that reference in Hebrews 12, because so often in that spiritual race, I feel more like this than I do those happy, smiley faces. I feel like a mess in that race as well. It's hard. We know what it's going to feel like at the finish line. And even, you know, in these races, in cross country, in high school, and triathlons now, I feel great at the finish line. You know, that's why you start. You know, at the starting line, you wonder why you're doing it, and you remember at the end. But in that spiritual race, I feel like I look like this most days myself. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. Do you feel like you feel more like this, or am I like the smiling, happy sprint to the end? I'm going to be great. I think that if we're honest, we would admit this race is hard as well. Does it ever feel like you're going as fast as you can just to almost keep up? Do you ever walk into church and feel like you're the only one in the room who doesn't have it all together? And you're just worried somebody's going to notice? Now, think of somebody who does spirituality right. Get somebody in your head. I'll wait. Got it? All right. Think of somebody who gets it right. Chances are you're not thinking of yourself. But the thing is, that person that you're picturing probably wouldn't be thinking of their self either. And the person they're thinking of likely wouldn't be thinking of themselves. And some of that is humility. Some of that is thinking highly of others and honoring mentors or something like that. But I don't think that's the whole picture. I think that we recognize spirituality in others, but we know ourselves too well. We know the mess that we have. You know, spirituality, yeah, I try my best, but I always screw it up. Right? Sound familiar? I don't pray enough, or I don't read the Bible enough, or I don't know my Bible as well as I'd like, or as well as those other people in Bible class seem to. Or when I get the opportunity to share my faith with somebody, I screw it up. Most of the time, I don't even realize I had the chance until afterwards. I said, oh, somebody else would have caught that, right? I'm not spiritual. I'm just a mess. It's amazing how prevalent that thought is. The best Bible class I've ever been in is a series of we started calling it young adults study, but there's all kinds of ages. And we started trying to go through regular Bible studies and talking about texts, and then one morning somebody shared something about feeling like a spiritual mess. And we talked about that for months. Just around the table saying, I felt this way, and I felt bad about it. And everybody said, me too! Had no idea. And we held each other up, and we built each other up, and encouraged one another. And we found out that everybody feels that way sometimes. I hope you're with me on this, because I'm confessing here some. Have you ever seen how somebody reacts when you tell them that you wish you had it together like they did spiritually? It's a strange feeling. Usually they say, oh, you have no idea. Or, you know, you don't want to be like me. You should want to be like somebody else. Rachel's downstairs with the kids. I'm going to use the opportunity to brag on her some. She has a number of times taught ladies' Bible class at Lapeer and some other places. And she's excellent at it. But she wouldn't want me saying that. And it's fun sometimes on Sunday mornings on the drive home, somebody says, she says, somebody told me they wish they had spirituality like me, and I don't get it. They're just wrong. I said, what do you mean? I wish I had like you too. That's the way that we often respond when we get that compliment. It doesn't make sense. We know ourselves better than that. We are messy, and we don't know how we're going to make it through. But here's the good news. God loves messy people. And God can use messy people. God has always used, get that off of there, messy people. And what got me thinking about this largely was a couple months ago when we were looking at John and Peter. And we were looking at that the lesson of be like Jesus. And we're talking about the different ways they talk about being like Jesus. And I mentioned how these guys didn't have it all together. And I think I was understating there. And it got me thinking some more about the different people in the Bible who just were complete messes and how God used them. Jesus called them. God took their mess and used them to reach other people, used them to change the world. And so this morning, I want to look at, briefly, those two examples we already talked about, with John and with Peter, look a little bit different perspective than we did last time, and then set up where I intend this series to go, is at the three others that we're going to look at a little more in depth. And look at the ways that God has used messy people in the past, and the different types of messy people, and how he just might still be able to do that today. So first, we have James and John. Right, we looked at John himself before, but we said that there always seemed to be a package deal. James and John. These are the immature Christians. Right? I suppose it makes sense. They were new Christians, just called right off the boat. And they sure showed it, right? Remember when they come to Jesus and say, we want to sit at your right hand and your left hand in heaven. And actually, that's the way Mark tells it. And Matthew says their mom came and asked him that, which I think plays into this depiction even more. Mentioned last time, the scene in Luke 9 where the Samaritan village didn't welcome Jesus, and they came and said, do you want us to call down fire from heaven and destroy them? You know, as we get they called the sons of thunder. These guys, they had some idea of what they're supposed to be doing, but they're just beginning to learn. They were immature. They were inexperienced. But the good news, and the reason that Jesus was able to use these two guys, is babies grow and immature Christians learn. They gain maturity through experience. They gain maturity through being around Jesus, through being around mature Christians. John was the only one of the 12 who lived to be an old man. And from the accounts we have, in his older years, his messages to the churches and to Christians was always the same. Love one another. Now, he wasn't calling down fire anymore. He was calling to love one another. He grew out of the Son of Thunder phase. And how did James and John get that maturity? You know, it wasn't by following the Pharisees' 613 easy steps to a righteous life. They spent time with Jesus. If your messiness comes from immaturity, and we know you're never too old to be immature, right? You gain maturity by focusing your attention on Jesus. What did Hebrews 12 call him? The author and perfecter of our faith. If you were already perfect, you wouldn't need a perfecter. But we do. So that's one kind of messiness. Maybe that's your kind of messiness. Maybe you're like James and John. Or maybe you're like Peter. Peter, we talked about, is the overly impulsive Christian. He's the one who never looks before he leaps. Peter is always functioning at full speed, even if he's going the wrong direction. Now, somebody's coming to arrest Jesus, give me that sword. I give him the Van Gogh treatment, right? Now, like I said before, I think that he only cut off the guy's ear because he was going for his head and missed. That's who Peter was. He was 100% all the time. And that caused problems for him. That caused a great deal of struggle and mess for Peter. Because the bad news about the impulsive Christian is the impulsive Christian fails a lot. Peter did. And it starts to get discouraging. Peter had it rough because of his excitement about Jesus. Rebuked, accused, arrested, eventually killed. Now, for every Pentecost sermon moment where 3,000 come forward, there seems to be another night in prison. Now, he'll confess Jesus as the Messiah over and over again to Jesus' face, but when it really counted, he screwed it up. Denied. And do you wonder if Peter ever wanted to give up? You know, we think of him as a great hero, but you got to figure there were some low moments in his life. And maybe he never admitted it to anyone, but I can imagine Peter in a very low and a very honest moment praying, God, why did you have to choose me? I was good at fishing, really good. You know he said that, because what fisherman would ever admit otherwise? See, I knew what I was doing with the net in my hands, but I feel like I can't get this discipleship thing right at all. Every time I open my mouth, I say something wrong, and more people want to kill me, and maybe I'm just not cut out for this. And maybe Peter's not the only one that's felt that way. Maybe you felt that way. It's just, it's hard, especially when you're always going at full speed. But the good news is Jesus can work with an impulsive Christian. He may have been a screw-up. And Peter may have run his mouth when he should have stuck to listening. But Jesus never had to doubt whether Peter was with him. He knew that Peter was the kind of guy that if Jesus said jump, by the time the other 11 had asked how high, Peter would have already jumped 3 times. Right? He figured, Jesus will tell me when I've jumped high enough. And he just starts jumping. You know, we even know he will jump out of a boat if he thinks he can get closer to Jesus. He sees Jesus walking on the water. You know, we talked about that scene in John 21 after the Jesus appeared after the resurrection, after the cast your nets on the other side appearance. They realize that it's Jesus, and Peter dives into the water and starts swimming. It says the others decided to row the boat back because it was only 100 yards away. And said it was funny because they probably got there about the same time. But even though he didn't get to Jesus any sooner than if he'd stayed in the boat and helped row, what a perfect image of Peter the impulsive Christian. A soaking wet mess standing before Jesus saying, "I just got so excited, I couldn't wait." And I think that's the kind of person that Jesus can work with. Maybe that's you. Impulsive, messy, but such potential. Now the next three we're only going to talk about briefly here because we're going to look at a fuller lesson later, but just give you a roadmap of what's coming up. We're going to look at Jonah. Now I acknowledge we're going to say Christian here, because Jonah, of course, was not Christian, came before Jesus, but Jonah's going to serve as an example for the Christian who wants to do things on their own terms, and only on their own terms. We're not going to be talking about the VBS version of Jonah here. You know, that Jonah is a nice story about why you should always obey your parents, or something like that. Right? Yeah, you know, the Jonah we're going to talk about is going to be the one who followed his greatest success of his prophetic career with a temper tantrum and an argument with God because he didn't kill the people that he thought deserved to be killed. You know, he didn't run away because he was afraid. He ran because he didn't like God's plan. And do you ever try to tell God that I will follow you, but only if you do it my way? So that's the kind of messy Christian we're going to look at. Then we're going to look at Nicodemus, the shy Christian. Now, he knows who Jesus is, and he says all of the right things as long as he's in a safe environment. Now, he'll come and ask Jesus questions at night when nobody can see him. He'll show up and help with the burial of Jesus. You know, after everybody's gone, he could do it behind the scenes. If he's in a safe environment, he'll say all the right things, but he hides his faith away from the rest of the world. And why? He's scared he might say something wrong. Scared of what responses he might get. Where do you draw that line between, well, I'm just leading by example instead of through words, and taking the easy way out? We'll talk some about the shy Christian. And then the last one we're going to look at is Paul. Paul, we're going to call the Christian with a past, or maybe even the damaged goods Christian. Now, Paul, the worst among sinners, called himself persecutor of the church. He does the things he doesn't want to do, and he doesn't do the things that he wants to do. Paul wears his mess on his sleeve and shows it like a badge of honor. And we respect him for that. But that doesn't make it any easier to own up to our own pasts and our own failings. How do we get out of our own way and let God use us? We'll talk about that. And the reason that we're looking at these different messes, not just because we're being honest about ourselves, not just because it makes for a nice tidy series where we can look at different examples and characters in the Bible, but we look at the ways that God can use messy people, messy Christians, because the alternative to embracing the mess and trying to use it for God is pretending. The only alternative we have is pretending that we don't have any mess. We try to get away with our hour of deception each week. And we try to convince each other that we have it all together. And you know, I don't think there's anything evil about that. I don't think it's an evil thing. And that's why this picture isn't, you know, a wolf in sheep's clothing or something like that, something dangerous. It's not evil, but it's also not terribly helpful either. It's about as helpful as this cat putting on a mane and pretending to be a lion. It knows the truth. We all know the truth. Not doing anybody any good. God wants you. Warts and all. And that doesn't mean that God doesn't seek to improve us and help us to mature and become better. It just means that we should admit that we aren't there yet. Admit that we are a mess. Stop trying to work so hard to pretend and cover up and be like someone else. We need to be what God has called us to be. That's why I wonder, in churches we see plants or crosses or song numbers or things like that in the front. I think we might be better served putting a sign like this in the front of our churches. We are under construction. Please excuse our mess. Now, that way, if we are blessed enough to have any messy, broken, damaged people from our community to join us, they'll know they've come to the right place. They'll know that they are our kind of people because we have the same kind of mess. You know, God saw humanity's potential when we were nothing more than a pile of dust. And sometimes we need to admit that we don't look much better now than we did then. But we remember that God doesn't see us that way. He's always seen us for what we are, made in His image, the body of Christ, blessed beyond belief. Mess and all. Now, this series is not an attempt to get anybody to come forward and confess anything. You're not going to show up to a Sunday morning Bible class or a Wednesday night Bible class where I'm going to open up the discussion and say, now it's time for everybody to share your mess. You don't need to worry about that. I hope you know that this is a safe place, and if you ever do need to lean on your family here or share, you can absolutely do that. But the point of this series is not to apply pressure to anyone. I'm not even making eye contact with anybody. Don't worry. The idea of this is not to shame somebody for their messiness. It's about taking the time to marvel at the ways that our amazing God has changed the world and continues to change the world using nothing but flawed, incomplete, messy people like us. So if there is anything that we could do this morning, this is the time now. Join us as we stand and sing.
Would you live for Jesus and be always pure and good?